Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Republican state lawmakers are mulling a plan to override some or all of Governor Kasich's 47 line item vetoes in the new two-year state budget. If they override even one of the vetoes, that would be a first for Governor Kasich. The most contentious issue has been the provision to freeze new enrollment in Medicaid beginning next year. Kasich is a longtime supporter of the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid expansion to mostly working poor Ohioans. The GOP-controlled Ohio General Assembly has not supported the expansion and included the freeze in defiance of the Republican governor. Now they ponder an override. Joining us is senior policy analyst at the conservative think tank, the Buckeye Institute, Greg Lawson. Welcome back, Greg.
Always great to be on.
And by phone, director of research at the liberal think tank, Policy Matters Ohio, Zach Schiller. Welcome back, Zach.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Also by phone, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Andy Chow. Hi, Andy. Welcome back.
Hi, good morning, Ann.
So I know that House members are starting to enter the chamber. They're still waiting for word on whether there will be veto overrides, and if so, which ones. What do we know?
Well, I'll give you the latest in breaking news.
Thanks.
Just in the past minute, Speaker Rosenberger started the House session, and they are right now, at this moment, taking up override votes. So they've started with their first line item, and they seem pretty poised to make at least one vote today. And I think from what I'm hearing, there could be about 10 items on the list that they are going to override today.
Now, does that mean, I want to talk, of course, about the Medicaid expansion issue, but does that mean if they're going to put them up there that they have the votes?
If they're going to put traditionally, so like we've been saying, this is kind of unprecedented, so we haven't seen it. But traditionally, if they put a bill up on the floor, that means they have the votes.
Right.
So for example, I've only seen one bill go to the floor and not pass.
Right.
So I believe that if they're going to put it up there, if they're going to put their stamp on it, that means that they're ready to bring the votes to override these vetoes.
And let's talk about the Medicaid expansion provision that Governor Kasich vetoed in the budget bill. Is that among the 10?
Well, we don't have a confirmed list of the 10. From what I've been hearing from talking to people in the hallways, it sounds like that the freeze to enrolling people under the expanded Medicaid population is on the agenda today. We haven't been able to completely confirm that. But it seems like through talking to people, through seeing certain things, it sounds like that it is on the agenda, at least for now.
At least, right.
While things progress, that could change too.
What have been the big bones of contention over this among Republicans? Why can't they get the votes? They've opposed this for a long time.
Well, I think you got to ask yourself, when it really comes down to it, are you a Republican who is willing to take on Governor Kasich? A couple of years ago, I don't think any Republican would be willing to take that on. He was a very popular governor. He was about to run for president, and you wanted to be on his side. Now, if you vote against, if you vote to override his vetoes, you're basically saying, I politically don't need you as much as I used to. And I think it's just kind of this line that's being drawn in the sand right now. I think there is obviously animosity and a rift between the Republican Party and Governor John Kasich at this point, and they're not afraid to show it now.
A lot of the rift revolves around the Medicaid expansion. He went around, did an end run on the legislature when he put this through a few years back.
I'm sorry, Ann. I was getting more information.
Yeah.
So can you say that again?
Let's turn. A lot of it has to do with the fact that Governor Kasich created the expansion in Ohio in the first place, right? A few years back, when Obamacare passed, he did an end run around the Ohio General Assembly.
Yeah, he at that point did not quite have the votes to get it through the entire House of Representatives. So instead, he went to what's known as the controlling board. To appropriate that money. So you're right. Ever since expansion began in Ohio, it's been something that a lot of Republicans have been against. And I think that this is kind of their moment to be able to say publicly what they feel about Medicaid expansion. And like you said, when people hear Medicaid expansion, they're equating that to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and, mm-hmm. and they're basically saying if I'm against Medicaid expansion, or if I'm against Obamacare, that means I'm against Medicaid expansion, and this is me showing that.
By the way, the first override has passed. It limits controlling board authority on size of request. Tell us about that, Andy Chow.
Well, this is that provision that was trying to kind of shore up the amount of money that agencies can take to the controlling board to get approved by that legislative panel.
Okay. Greg Lawson, you did a thumbs up on that one.
If it's the one that I'm thinking of, we think that's a good move. The controlling board has a purpose in Ohio, which is to be able to spend certain dollars. But one of the things that we've always had a problem with the controlling board is that it can draw down unanticipated dollars. In other words, the federal program comes up with a new program and there's federal money attached to it. Instead of having a vote of the entire General Assembly, this rump legislature with an executive member on it that votes ends up being able to draw down the money, and the way the statute currently reads, accept the terms of the program with which the money is coming from. So we have a thing where the controlling board, as opposed to the entire legislature, can accept new federal programs and put the state on the hook for those federal programs.
Like Medicaid expansion.
And Medicaid expansion is the most relevant and most recent one, certainly, and the biggest one probably that's ever happened under the controlling board. Our view would be, if you're going to do something like that and you're going to accept that, that's a major public policy decision. Let the legislature in whole make the decision.
And Greg, if I can jump in here and ask, so I believe, like looking back on the history of this, in 2013, the controlling board accepted Medicaid expansion, but then 2 years ago when it was time to renew, they could just do that end around where it was just again, through controlling board, and they didn't have to go through the full House and Senate, correct?
Well, yeah, what happens is when the controlling board accepts those dollars, it accepted the terms of the program that is attached to those dollars. So once they accepted the dollars that first time back in 2013, we were on the hook for Medicaid expansion. Now, there's been some stuff with where they put money in special accounts and that you had to go back to the controlling board, and there's been some in around and some complications there. But fundamentally, once the controlling board made the first decision, we had expanded Medicaid, and it the money flows through the program. You wouldn't need that separate vote.
Zach Schiller, any thoughts about that, particularly from where you sit?
Well, I mean, I do think that we should look at what the real policies are here. I think that it's a bit of a stretch to act as if the legislature had nothing to do with this. The controlling board, the membership, six of the seven members are named by the leadership of each house. And so had the leadership of the General Assembly wanted to keep Ohio from having Medicaid expansion, they could have kept that from happening. So it's a bit disingenuous to act as if while it's true the whole General Assembly didn't vote, certainly the legislative leadership agreed to it.
Andy Chow?
Yeah, I just want to just point out again just how odd all of this is. You're hearing, you know, like controlling board is led by Republicans. The governor is a Republican. You wouldn't expect this kind of fight to be happening among the same party. You would think, well, if the governor were a Democrat and then the leading members were. So this is all this infighting within one party.
There has been another override vote which deals with Medicaid optional group coverage. Andy Chow, what's that about?
Well, this is leading up to what we've been talking about, which is the freeze on Medicaid expansion. And this is just another optional group coverage. And it's just a way to really kind of, I don't want to say stop Medicaid expansion, but it's just to limit more groups who can opt into Medicaid. And I believe that's the item right before the freeze. So mm-hmm. we're getting close to the big ticket item here. And it's them sending a message again that they want to rein in Medicaid spending, especially with Congress dealing with what they're working on with their health care bill.
Okay, but the governor's defense of his vetoes is that one major defense is that it's illegal for the Ohio General Assembly to make policy regarding a federal program like Medicaid.
And what's going to happen is they're going to have to seek a waiver through the White House, through their Medicaid Service Committee, and they're going to have to try to get this approved. And in the end, the question is, will a Trump administration approve these kind of waivers?
Because the last time they sought one, the Obama administration did not, of course. And when you say they, are you talking about the Ohio General Assembly or are you talking about the Kasich administration?
So we're kind of talking about both. The Ohio General Assembly put into law that the governor's administration has to seek that waiver. So they're kind of telling the governor what to do. Now, in the past, the governor has and his administration has kind of drag their feet, per se, on these types of things mm-hmm. and not have done it in quite a speedy way. The General Assembly, the House and the Senate are saying, hey, the governor, you need to go do this even when he doesn't want to do it.
What are you hearing or anybody hearing from the Kasich administration right now?
Well, they've been pretty silent on this point. Usually when legislation is being crafted, they try not to speak up, but what we've been hearing from the Kasich administration has been what you just said, what he put into these veto messages, and basically he's defending what Ohio has created here with its Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act, and they think that doing these changes, making these changes, especially with the enrollment freeze, that you're cutting off that legislators would be cutting off healthcare access to hundreds of thousands of Ohioans.
We've just underheard that the House will not override the Medicaid expansion freeze veto.
Okay.
So that was the big one.
That was the big one. That's the expansion freeze, and that's where a lot of the legal issues that you were bringing up, that's where a really big fight could have had to happen, where they would have had to seek this waiver to be able to do this. It would have been by next year. So under what the House and Senate passed after 2018, July of 2018, people could not enroll into Medicaid under the expanded population. If they don't take up that override vote, that means that freeze is no longer around.
Yeah, apparently we're underhearing that they don't have the votes to override John Kasich's veto of the Medicaid expansion freeze. Greg Lawson, address just for a moment what Andy Chow is just saying about this schism in the Republican Party in Ohio.
Certainly. I mean, obviously, there were a lot of folks that were very worried about the Medicaid expansion. That whole thing was a big routine back in 2013. They
right.
actually put a prohibition. And one level of the budget, they gave authority to the administration to expand unless there was a specific population prohibited. Well, then they added language to prohibit the expansion, and the governor line item vetoed it back in 2013. Mm-hmm. That's what opened the door to him then subsequently going to the controlling board.
Okay.
And so they were very upset about that, so he used line item veto authority then. Then he went to the controlling board to do it. There was even litigation. Several state reps actually said the controlling board can't act against the will of the legislature, and we had a prohibition in the final budget passed by both chambers that made it through the conference committee. But the Supreme Court then made the decision that, no, the final enacted budget, which includes the line item vetoes, is what counts as intent. So basically they were saying if you really wanted to show that you didn't want it, you would have overridden the veto then. But they have always had a problem because, look, there's a real concern that Medicaid over time is not getting people access to the quality care that we want. We want people in private insurance.
And I want to talk about that later.
And,
yeah.
And so that's something that a lot of conservatives feel very strongly about. They just don't trust the program. Two, you know, former Governor Voinovich called Medicaid back 20-plus years ago the Pac-Man of the state budget. And it still is. It
I keeps saw chopping. The reference to that in your...
Yeah, and the reason I love that is because it's kind of true. It keeps eating more and more things, and there's a lot of other budget priorities. I mean, K-12 education is obviously one of the biggest budget items as well. But the more you see Medicaid, the more the feds change things. Obviously, the state's on the hook for some of this under current law, mm-hmm. but now you
things
have...
Things could change.
And what we said back in 2013 is now what is really everybody's concerned about it, which is that they may change it to a block grant and all kinds of things, and then
yeah,
the state's going to have too much
let's
money.
Let's wait for a minute. Even the legislation in Congress, neither the House nor the Senate bills in Congress would reduce the federal share of Medicaid until after this biennial budget period. So we are basically saying what may happen some years off in the future we're using as an excuse to cut hundreds of thousands of Ohioans off medical care.
They could just wait for another biennial budget to address that if it happens.
We're going to, it appears.
It looks like, Andy Chow, I don't want to let you go.
That's fine.
The Ohio House won't try to override the Medicaid expansion enrollment freeze to veto today, but House Speaker Rosenberger has said there's time at a later date. What's he talking about?
Well, under Ohio law, you have until the end of the General Assembly session to override any vetoes. So if you wanted to, they could hold a vote December 29th, 2018, if they wanted to. Now, this is a provision that would have started in July 2018, so I assume that they would hold a vote before then. But he does have time. They're not obligated to do this in any sort of time frame.
Zach Schiller, are there any restrictions on in terms of seeking the waiver and that kind of a thing that would affect when they could vote on this in the future?
Well, I'm not familiar with the law directly to know of how late they could do it. I would think that you could do it until the July 18 of when they, you know, the thing goes into effect. I don't think you could do it after that.
Okay. No restrictions that way.
But politically, I would assume that, again, as we know with all sort of controversial bills, you want to hold the vote when you have momentum to hold that vote. The longer this thing sits, I think the less momentum you have. And the less politically viable it is.
But it is something that maybe lawmakers could go during the election cycle, which they return to after this session, you know, after this ends, that they could say, well, we can still get back to this. What do you want to do? Do you want us to go back to it? And they can kind of keep it out there as a reality during before the November elections.
That's right.
Yeah. Andy Chow, can you stay with us?
Sure.
Okay. Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, also with us by phone, Zach Schiller, Director of Research at Policy Matters Ohio, and in the studio with me, Greg Lawson, Senior Policy Analyst at the Buckeye Institute. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio Republican lawmakers are mulling whether to override some of the 47 line item vetoes Governor Kasich imposed before signing the state's new two-year budget. I know that so far there have been 7 overrides that have been approved in the House. The most notable among those provisions, the vetoes, nixed a provision to freeze the Medicaid expansion, which covers some 725,000 low-income Ohioans. The House has announced that it will not take that up at this time, but they could any time before the end of the session in December 2017. Still with us by phone is the Director of Research at the liberal think tank Policy Matters Ohio, Zach Schiller. Zach, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And also senior policy analyst at the conservative think tank Buckeye Institute, Greg Lawson. Thanks again, Greg.
Thank you.
And with us by phone is Andy Chow, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Lots of stuff happening down there now. The House is taking up something called the MCO sales tax cut. Counties and transit authorities say that they need this $207 million a year revenue. Tell us, it's something that was imposed in 2009. What in the world is it, Andy Chow?
Well, it's complicated, and I'll try to explain it, and then I'll let Greg and Zach jump in here too.
Okay.
But it's a tax that basically what the House wanted to do, because this was a tax that this was revenue that was coming into the state that was all of a sudden not coming into the state. And so what the House and Senate wanted to do was, again, seek a waiver through the U.S. Medicaid services to be able to tax insurance companies a franchise fee, a higher franchise fee, in order to create more revenue, and then that revenue would have gone back into things like public transit and transportation. And I'll let the other two explain it better
Let me say that this was revenue that was coming from this expansion that was going to Medicaid care organizations. Where it was being taken from Medicaid care organizations, it was a tax on them. At the federal level, stopped that tax. And so this is to replace the revenue that would have come to these counties and these transit authorities. They're taking it up right now. I'm sorry, managed care organizations. Apologize for that. But Zach Schiller, why is this important? I mean, why do counties and transit authorities, why do they have a dog in this race?
Well, as you mentioned, there's $207 million a year in revenue at stake, and it's money that comes out of the local sales taxes that are levied by counties and transit authorities around the state. And so when the state extended the sales tax to the managed care organizations mm-hmm. providing Medicaid, it meant that the sales tax, including those local sales taxes, applied to it as well. And that added up to a significant amount of money. So, of course, they're concerned because they've been hammered with other cuts, and so losing another major mm-hmm. source of revenue is concerning.
It looks like the House has overridden the veto on health insurer tax, the health insurer tax for counties and regional transit authorities, 87-10, so pretty pronounced there. Zach Schiller, what's next for those entities then?
Well, it means that then they will be seeking that waiver to come up with this other way of covering not just the managed care organizations that deliver Medicaid, but those in general. And so they'll have to seek that again. And I think before they do so, they're going to be asking, will they be able to increase the rate? And so I think it becomes a kind of complex issue of what does the federal government allow or what will the Trump administration allow. But to me, the fundamental point is that our counties and transit agencies, if we find ourselves further cutting back on the revenue that they have, we can expect them to further reduce the services they have. So COTA, for example, will find itself losing revenue from this, and it will have to either find additional sources of revenue or cut services to riders. And, you know, to me, it's highly ironic that the same legislators who talk all the time about people needing to go to work or to find work are busy undercutting their ability to do so by reducing funding for public transit, by saying they're not going to provide, allow people to get medical care under Medicaid, or by saying that they're not going to provide the same level of public child care support that they once did. So, you know, essentially, we want everybody to go to work, and we're not going to do anything to allow them to go to work that's going to make it easier for them to do so. And I think that that's I'm glad to see that the General Assembly in this case has has overridden that veto and made sure that there's at least an opportunity for counties and transit agencies to receive these needed revenues.
Okay, so that's how it works. You're happy about this, Zach Schiller.
Yes, I think we've seen two positive developments here where, you know, while there are a lot of things in the budget I think are objectionable and it does not sufficiently fund all kinds of important services, the fact that we apparently will be seeing a continuation of the Medicaid expansion and that there will be some opportunity for counties and transit agencies to continue receiving these funds are both important developments that allow for a better way of life for many Ohioans, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them.
Greg Lawson?
Well, I think that I have a mirror reflection image of what Zach was just saying because obviously—
At least two sides today.
We're on the record. We were generally supportive of the freeze. We think this is a missed opportunity to begin to get better controls and to continue the efforts to reform Medicaid to get people into private coverage. That said, there's still, I think, a veto to come on the Healthy Ohio program, which is a waiver that was already submitted to Obama's administration that— Clearly, the Kasich administration doesn't want to submit again to the new Trump administration. If they successfully override that veto, though, he will be compelled to do that. And I feel that there's a good chance that that waiver would be approved by Washington now. And I think that that transforms Medicaid pretty dramatically. So I think there's still something there that we would say is a good policy. But look, on this MCO replacement, the one thing that I think is extremely important is that amount of money that went to the counties with the piggyback sales tax was largely a windfall because of the Medicaid expansion. It was and really they got more money because Medicaid expansion obviously had a lot more enrollees than were ever projected by mm-hmm. the administration when they were promoting the policy back in 2013. So, you know, and quite frankly, we at the Buckeye Institute and some others, but largely us, were saying that money was going to go away. This wasn't a secret. This wasn't something that the counties were unaware about. I guess our view would be it was a windfall. It was always pretty obvious it was going to go away. The feds were telegraphing this for years. Mm-hmm. And what happened was imminently foreseeable. So in this case, we actually supported the governor's veto conceptually on that and are somewhat disappointed. But again, it's got to go to the Trump administration. We'll see what they do, whether they do it or not. And there is an interesting question that the Kasich administration has even raised, which is they got a waiver to bring in money as a replacement for the state. They didn't get it for the locals. That's what this veto was about. Mm-hmm. But they got a deal on the Health Insurance Corporation franchise fee that brings in state money. Mm-hmm. It is conceivable that the Trump administration may say, no, 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 we don't support that. You got it from Obama. You didn't get it from us. I don't know that it's likely, but Kasich thought it was likely enough that he certainly put that out there that they could be denied the waiver they already got. That could be almost $1 billion to the state budget that could get taken away if the feds decide to not go with this waiver, for example, the one they just overrode, and decides to actually open up Pandora's box and say, no, we're not going to let you keep the waiver that you already got.
Well,
from the state.
That's a red herring that's been introduced by the Kasich administration unsuccessfully, I'm glad to see, to keep the veto override from happening. And I think the fundamental point here is that the Kasich administration doesn't feel that local governments should get the resources that they need to provide the services that people need. And they've assaulted local governments. They've taken away $1 billion a year through a whole variety of changes in the tax system, and which this particular thing does not overcome. I mean, it's not as if this means that the counties and the transit agencies are somehow or made whole. And, even other provisions in the budget take money that was supposed to go to local governments and put it instead into the opioid addiction fight, which is, of course, a very worthy thing. But why are we taking money, robbing Peter to pay Paul here? You know, the Kasich administration has distinguished itself by attacking local governments and local government funding. And, I don't see that as a positive, and nor do local governments around the state or many of the people who live in those communities. And so, I think that's really what's at issue here, and whether or not the Trump administration accepts the waiver, mm-hmm. what we should be doing is appropriately funding the services that are needed. And instead, what we've done is we've cut taxes $3 billion a year over the last 12 years.
Okay.
And, we have little to show for it.
The Ohio House has overridden Kasich's veto on the measure to prevent the controlling board from granting future Health and Human Services money without legislative approval for Medicaid. Andy Chow, what does that do?
Well, I believe this is the one where it forces the governor's administration to take changes to Medicaid or Medicaid expansion to the legislature every time that there's a change, that so legislature has to approve it. Going back to the thing we were talking about earlier where the governor took Medicaid expansion to the controlling board the first time to be able to approve it, and then 2 years later when there were changes, it just kind of automatically happened because of a change in law that he thought that you could just accept it without having to go to the legislature again. So this is basically saying if there's changes to Medicaid, if there's something that you want to do differently, the legislature has to approve it.
Another veto that was overridden, it regards medical rates on neonatal and newborn services. Andy Chow, can you talk about that?
I don't know much about that, but I do think that it all kind of goes into the same box politically where the Republicans in the House and Senate had specific ideas of how they wanted to both rein in Medicaid spending and seek flexibility on what Ohio could do as far as Medicaid goes. And so what I was hearing from people in the House and Senate is that if they're going to take on these items, these veto items from Kasich, they have to take all of them on. They can't just pick and choose. They're going to say, if we're going to be upset about how they think that he's overreaching with his veto, then they're going to take on every single one of these things.
Tell us about what's the mood at the State House right now.
It's interesting because, I mean, to me, it's kind of this moment of people kind of coming into the sunlight and making their voice heard as far as where they think the state is and what they think of the governor right now. Because we've been hearing behind closed doors several Republicans, several people saying that they're upset with the governor and they think that he hasn't shown enough attention to Ohio, that he hasn't been working with Republican leaders in the House and Senate throughout this budget process. I think there's some anger there that he's been front and center on the national stage criticizing President Trump. Meanwhile, there are Republicans here in their own districts who are either trying to support what the president's doing or trying to repeal and replace Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And then they have this Republican governor who, in their mind, is not talking to them, is not sitting down with them, and still bashing members of their own party.
I know there were hundreds of protesters down at the State House yesterday. Are there some there today?
I think there are some protesters rolling in and out, but yesterday was the big rally where people from all over the state came together.
We've just learned that the House has overridden, and I don't know if that's a verb or not.
I've been saying it too.
The veto to allow Ohio to charge premiums to certain Medicaid recipients, that means that Ohio can now charge premiums to certain Medicaid recipients. Andy Chow, what's at stake there?
Well, I think Greg touched on the Healthy Ohio program. And Greg, is that the same thing as the Healthy Ohio program?
That's slightly different. There should be a separate item for the Healthy Ohio. I think there was some questions about who you could have premiums attached to. I mean, Kasich initially wanted some premium somewhere in some budget somewhere, but I can't remember how the legislature modified it. I think what they're trying to do is retain, much to what your point, Andy, was, a lot of this is about the legislature feeling like they have ceded too much power to the administration. Over the years, they've given the OBM director a lot of budget authority. Rather than having to come back to the legislature, they just gave it to him. And they've given a lot of power to the Medicaid director. And I think that all of this is part and parcel of trying to say this is the biggest item in the budget. We're the ones who are charged with appropriating the money for it. Therefore, we need to have more control over policy, not have a black box in the administration, whoever's governor, not just Kasich, but whoever it might be, coming up with policies, and then we're stuck with the financial outcomes no matter what. So I think this is more in that wheelhouse. I'd have to look a little more specifically to know exactly that particular provision, but I don't think it was the Healthy Ohio piece.
And I will say that the governor wants to charge so-called premiums to Medicaid recipients, and so do Republicans in the legislature. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the question is whether they will or not. The question is how are they going to go about it, and it goes back to this whole question of who has the power now. So I think that if they can, that they're going to charge premiums.
Zach?
Well, I think that's true, and so whatever they do on that point, I think that we can expect something going ahead in that direction, which I think is very unfortunate because it's been shown that when you start charging even small premiums to people, it means that they don't continue in the program, and so it's basically another way. I think the Kasich administration estimated last year when the Healthy Ohio program was put forward as a waiver to the feds, including premiums, it would drive over 100,000 people out of the program. And so, you know, you can talk about this in a nice way or try and look at the details, but the point is, do we want to allow people to have the health care that they need so that they can live productive lives or not? And so the answer to that question, yes or no, is what's driving this discussion. And so people who don't think that that's necessary have one position. I don't think it's a reasonable one because I don't see how you can expect that. I mean, I don't think the people in this phone call, do we have health care? Do we feel that we could we would want to go without health care? Do we think that we could be productive workers or that it wouldn't be enormously stressful not to have health care? Of course, we all think it's important. And so being able to make sure that people have that not only allows them to live more productive lives, it allows more reasonable health care provision of services so that people get treatment when they need it. They don't rush to the emergency room when they're in dire shape, costing a lot more. And in fact, we wind up paying those costs in the end anyway. It's just that instead of paying them through a Medicaid program where people can get the care they need when they need it, it winds up being, you know, increased bills for everybody else because those costs have to be paid somehow.
There have been 11 overrides of vetoes today. The speaker has said that the remaining vetoes are left pending. That means they could be taken up in a later session, and that includes the Medicaid expansion enrollment freeze. That's a total of 11 overrides today. What's happening, Andy Chow?
Well, it's funny when you said 11. Yesterday, when I was trying to get a count of how many overrides there might be today, I heard that the House was gunning for 12, so that leaves one more on the table, which goes back to that Medicaid expansion enrollment freeze. So I really think that that's the one that we're going to be having to keep an eye on still. And I think it's interesting that people were able to put their name down as a vote to override vetoes, but they weren't ready to go against that one yet. And that's because that's the big hot button topic there.
That affects a 500,000 people.
Right. And I want to make sure that the listeners know what we're talking about here. So the House holds these votes. Now these items go to the Senate. So these vetoes are not overridden yet. It still has to be approved by the Senate. And so we still don't know where the Senate lands on all these 11 items that were voted today.
And can they pick up different items than the House has, and then they have to reconcile them in another conference committee?
Well, the way I know how the process works, I believe that if a bill, so we're talking about a bill and not a veto.
Yeah.
If the bill starts in one chamber and then goes to the other, then if a veto override were to happen, it would have to go back to the original chamber. So if it started in the House, then the House starts and then it has to go to the Senate. Because the House heard the budget first, it's always heard by the House first. Mm-hmm. That means the House has to take action on these things first, and then it goes to the Senate.
And so then if the Senate makes any changes, then it has to go back again to the House?
Well, I don't think the Senate, I think really the only position the Senate is in at this point is waiting to see which veto overrides the House makes. And then if the House makes them, then these 11 provisions that they just overrode today are now on their way to the Senate. And then the Senate can decide. They have two options: override it or don't override it.
Okay, we are going to continue our conversation. We are talking about what's happening down at the Ohio State House right now. They have just concluded work on a total of 11 overrides of the governor's vetoes of the two-year state spending budget. It's the first time this has ever happened to Governor Kasich. It's rare in any event to muster that many votes to override a governor's veto. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Ohio Republican lawmakers have been mulling whether to override some of the 47 line item vetoes Governor Kasich imposed before signing the state's new two-year budget. There have been 11 overrides so far, but from what we understand, Andy Chow, they have also voted to override the veto of the waiver regarding the Healthy Ohio program.
Yeah, the Healthy Ohio program is something that's been a big point of contention between Republicans in the House and Senate and Governor Kasich. It again forces the administration to go to the federal level to seek a waiver that, in their words, it gives Ohio flexibility on how to manage the Medicaid program, but it allows them to. Oh, it allows them to increase premiums. It allows to cap spending. It could create ways to kick people off of Medicaid if they don't follow these rules. So it's kind of a controversial program. Democrats don't like it. Governor John Kasich doesn't like it. And it was not approved the last time they went to seek this waiver under the Obama administration.
Right, but Greg Lawson, this is something that Buckeye Institute favors the Healthy Ohio program, and under Trump administration has a lot better chance.
Correct. And I think the key thing about Healthy Ohio is that there are, as Andy said, there's some budgetary issues there where there's some teeth. But something that's very important in Healthy Ohio that didn't get much coverage is there are things called bridge accounts. It's these HSAs. Money goes into the HSA. But as somebody then...
The health savings account.
Correct. Sorry, health savings account. But this is very important. This is how we get people into good quality health care. There's a what is called a bridge account, where if you don't use your health savings account money, you get to use that money to buy into one of the exchanges now and get private coverage. So it enables folks who are then getting above the poverty line and getting off of Medicaid, it gives them some money to help them afford getting into private coverage. And this is where Healthy Ohio, and there's another waiver that the governor didn't veto. Mm-hmm. There's something called a state innovation waiver, and it's a complicated waiver, but it was in the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. And they have now added a deadline for the Kasich administration to submit this waiver as well. And to make a long story short, this waiver will help to modify a lot of the regulations that have been leading to insurers going out of the exchanges. It'll go back so we get cheaper private coverage. So when you have the bridge account from Healthy Ohio married to this other waiver that they will now be seeking, mm-hmm. now you're seeing the pipeline for how you can get people off of Medicaid. There's all this talk of people losing coverage. What we want is to move people off of Medicaid, yes, but we want to move them into private coverage where they get access to good doctors and get good quality care. This is where both of these two waivers, Healthy Ohio and the State Innovation Waiver, can move together and actually help get people off and into better coverage from our perspective.
Zach Schiller, thoughts about that?
Well, I think that, you know, that's the rhetoric, but the reality is that very large numbers of people lose coverage. And, you know, this idea of Medicaid is sort of a transitory program that people should only be on briefly and then they should move off of it, you know, is, what is it, half the babies in Ohio that are covered by Medicaid, 3 million people, you know, many people need medical coverage and are not easily going to be covered in the private market, particularly given the turmoil going on in the private market right now. The idea that all of these folks are going to transition into some better situation with the private market, I think, is just laughable. And so it's a cloak for what's really going on here, which is that they don't want to see people getting the coverage that they need, so they come up with these disguises that make it seem as if, oh, yeah, we're just helping them transition. You know, the fact is that Walmart has, the last data we had, 12,000-13,000 workers or family members of workers who are on Medicaid. Those folks are on Medicaid because they aren't making enough to qualify.
It's not because
they're
not
working.
To
pay for regular health insurance. And, you know, 7 out of the 10 top jobs in Ohio pay so little that a family of 3 is eligible for food stamps. So let's get real. You know, we need an economy that's going to work for people, that'll pay people enough that they can afford health insurance. And if they don't, then coming up with these kinds of gimmicks is not going to replace Medicaid as a source of medical care for so many people in Ohio.
Greg Lawson, State Budget Director Tim Keene just put out notice that things are not going to get better, that there is a really big problem with wage stagnation in Ohio, that they're just not recovering the wages, even if they're recovering, quote unquote, the jobs. They're not the wages. The wages are a huge problem here. What about that? I mean, there are people everywhere that are working 1, 2, 3 jobs sometimes, trying to put food on the table.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And this is a very complicated question that has a lot of different pieces to it. Some of it's in healthcare, some of it's taxes, some of it's regulations and all of these things. We have long thought that obviously we want to see wages growing and we want to get better paying jobs. And I think where Zach and I would disagree profoundly is we think there's a lot of regulatory hurdles. We think there's a lot of licensing issues. I mean, this gets outside of the budget, but gets to issues that we really need to address so that we can get jobs created quickly and then jobs also where people can get in on the front line and move up more quickly. Yeah, it's a problem. And it's a problem nationally, too, but it's always a problem in Ohio. Ohio always suffers more. So definitely that's the problem. We have to get the economy moving much better, not only for the number of jobs, which still we think is not growing quite where we want it to be by any means. But the hotter the market is for jobs, that's when you start to see the pressure for wage growth, because then you see competition for employees. We need to do more on that. Otherwise, we're going to be constantly having this conversation. Absolutely, we want to transition people off Medicaid into private coverage, but we believe that that's better, that that gets them better health care access than what they're going to get under Medicaid. And we think that it also will give them flexibility as they get into the workforce. There's a lot of stuff with health insurance, and that is such a titanic conversation. And all, but we have to be able to get people off of a program that sucks so many resources that then it crowds out other resources or means that you have to do things that are going to hurt your economy to pay for it all.
Andy Chow.
Sure. I was going to make a political comment because I'm looking over these votes and these override votes. So the ones that did not have bipartisan support, there are some here like that all the Democrats and all the Republicans voted for. So not the more contentious issues, but the ones where it seemed like there was a big split. It looks like the House had 66 votes on those more hot topic issues. So 66 to 65 votes. So I really think if we're trying to read the tea leaves for a possible override of the freeze, it looks like they do have this. Possibly the 60 that they need to bring that up at some point. I thought it was going to be a little closer. I thought it would have been like maybe 61 or 62 votes to override these things, but it looks like there's at least 65 Republicans who are willing to consistently say that they want to override Kasich's vetoes.
Why not take it up today, I guess, is the question.
I wonder, I'm just guessing here, but I wonder if it's just politically such a hot topic. There was that big rally yesterday, like you said, where hundreds of people were on the State House Plaza. I think that there aren't.
Do it in a lame duck session, in other words?
Well, maybe, but they wanted to freeze it at the end of July of next year, and doing it in a lame duck would mean waiting another 6 months. So I'm not sure exactly what they're waiting for, but like the speaker has said, he has plenty of time to bring that up for a vote. I will also note that there are several members who are not here today because they already made vacation plans or summer plans, or they just weren't able to make it here because it's kind of unusual to be here in July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. What about the economic forecast that Tim Keene put out the other day, Andy Chow?
I think that's especially interesting because what he shows is that over the next 2 years, Ohio is going to underperform the country in real output, in personal income gains, in employment gains, in the unemployment rate, and even in the increase in retail and food service sales. And so it means that through June of 2019, Ohio will be underperforming the country on all of those key measures. And what does that tell us? That tells us that the economic strategy that's been used in Ohio has failed. And that economic strategy has been, let's cut taxes. So I think the verdict is in. We've cut taxes for the last, since 2005, costing us over $3 billion a year. It's not allowing us to properly fund K-12 education, higher education, a whole bevy of human services, and it is not generating an economy that is even as good as the national economy. And people can say, oh, well, that hasn't been, you know, we've underperformed for decades. That may be true, but the magic potion of tax cuts has failed. And I think that, that's a key learning which we ought to be taking some knowledge from.
Greg Lawson, we have about a minute left.
Yeah. Look, we have underperformed for decades. This isn't a new thing for Ohio. This is a systemic problem. And nobody, and least of all the Buckeyes, would have said that tax cuts and tax reform is the magic elixir who's going to solve all these problems. There's a lot more in regulations. There's a lot more that we need to do to unwind some of that. And in particular, I think I've mentioned before, but there's licensing issues where people have to get licenses. And it takes time for people to get jobs.
But the
we
tax
need to
cuts
fix
have
these
been...
Well, but I think one of the big problems is that if you try to – tax cuts are an important piece of a much larger puzzle, and I would submit that we are still lagging in some of these other sections of reform. There's this assumption that if the tax cuts
– Which is a good topic for another program. Why are tax cuts always put in front of all the other kinds of issues that affect this equation?
Well, they need to be done – we need to do it more in tandem, and that's something we're talking a lot about is how we do all of it. It can't can't be one thing, but we do need to get the jobs going. I couldn't agree more, and we need the wages growing, and there's a lot of concern.
There have been regulations cut for the last 6.5 years, and the idea that some of these other things, there's always an excuse. Let's look at what the strategy has been. The strategy has been, let's cut taxes. It hasn't worked. It needs to be reversed.
Zach Schiller, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Zach Schiller, Director of Research at Policy Matters Ohio. Greg Lawson, thanks to you as well, Senior Policy Analyst at the Buckeye Institute.
Thank you very much.
And Andy Chow, Reporter for Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Andy, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And thanks to the All-Site staff, Producer Michael DeBonis, Assistant Producer Shia LaNott, Interns Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley, and Owen Doherty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.